Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are here again as usual. Should really stop using the word again because from Monday to Friday, 4:30 to 6, you have nothing going on here on Eagle FM but Home Run with Helmut and Dwight with yet well, as always, with an exciting topic on, you know, ballistic topic, exciting topic, you know, powerful topics like nuclear, powerful topics. Speaking of nuclear, today's discussion is about nuclear. I think I should look into being a rapper. No, I just, you know.
You know, I don't want to take over your role as the comedian, resident comedian. So please don't.
His Excellency. You started it.
Dude, it's 2 minutes into the show. 2 minutes.
Look, this is what sets Home Run apart.
At least the other times it was 5 minutes in the show. Now we're at 2 minutes.
Yeah,
later on it will be at 30-second intervals.
Then the next thing you know, from the, you know, just the day one. Funny Mark set, ready, go.
Start shooting.
Yeah.
Not literal shooting, guys.
No, we'll leave that one for the Americans, you know, school dropouts. That was uncalled for. But anyway, they started it. So. Just, you know, constantly have to remind myself that I don't have bodyguards.
Helmut, what happened? What happened?
That's a good question.
Who made you angry?
That's a good question. You really know how to deal with comedians. Because, because we write our best jokes when we are going through crap. So, if you attend, if you have a comedian friend and, you know, they are just bringing out their best material, check up on them. Something is wrong somewhere. Now, for yours truly here, don't worry. There's nothing Nami Breweries can't handle. So.
Look, they can't.
We really have to talk about nuclear.
They can't sponsor us anymore, you know. Well, we'd like them to, you know, to expand its sponsorship scenarios. But yeah.
No, look, I'm just giving them credit for being there when, you know, when. When we need them.
Okay, I'm not there yet, Amon. You can't put me in that boat yet. You know? Yet.
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 I'm so glad you used the word yet.
Yeah, you can't put me there yet. But yes, it's a good thing you highlighted. Obviously, we're taking another dimension at the nuclear discussion. Interesting enough, Helmut, this particular report in its own right.
Yeah.
Now, I was frowning at this report's title, World Nuclear Industry Status Report.
Yeah.
And then, I go and look at, you know, and they're on page 5. Let me go pull up that thing. They're on page 5, you know, the sponsors of the report. I always like looking at those things because you always get an indication from what particular perspective are they, you know, championing this discussion or why are they interested in the subject matter. And it's one of the things that I was taught in my...
So you're following the money.
Always following the money and always looking at what's the motivation that might pop up in the report.
Yeah.
So that you at least can be forewarned. Hey, Dwight, watch out for, what do they call that thing? You know the term that they use for the people that are now using the term green, just energy transitions and green energy, lobbyists. Now they're using the term greenwashing all your language. So so it's almost like sanitizing all your language.
Everything under the guise of green energy initiatives. Yeah,
yeah. And selling the idea that energy of the future will be free from fossil fuel usage.
Yeah, free is an overstatement.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you are true. You are right. Yeah, free is an overstatement. Then I go look at here it's actually on page 1, not page 5. They're on the cover page of the report. You have three particular entities which are NGOs of political parties and a political party.
I'm assuming the first ones you are referring to the German ones.
All of them are German.
Really?
All of them are German. You can obviously see that the German...
Spazio Europa? Why does that sound Italian?
No. Yeah, on the front page of these logos.
Yeah.
On the front page.
Yeah, I'm looking at them.
So, I don't know where you're seeing Spazio Europa, because on the front page itself, it cites the... Which part of the report is that, Helmut? Which page?
The first one.
Why does my report and your report look different, Helmut?
I'm looking at two reports, because there are two reports that came out. Here they are. There's one for Global Launch. Morning and afternoon presentation.
Oh, yeah, from the website itself, yeah. Okay. You're on the website itself. So the report that obviously that I shared with you, that one that takes the whole world analysis as well. So you can obviously see who sponsored the report. So it's they've got an office in Namibia as well, the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung, which is named after a German politician of a certain particular party in Germany. You guys can look this up. The Heinrich Boll Stiftung, same as well, German political party. The Energie Stiftung, I just don't know if this is a political party as well, because the website itself, CH, obviously would imply probably another country. And then you've got obviously the Greens, which is in the European party, which is the green political party in Europe, in the European Parliament. And you've got the German Federal Waste Office, German Federal Office of for the Safety of Nuclear Waste Management. So it's literally sponsored and what do they call that word? Not just sponsor, you have sponsor and it's almost like giving a blessing, kind of a scenario. Obviously by the German state. Now, back in 2022, 2023, just to set the scene for you, dear listeners, is that the Germans had decommissioned some of their nuclear power stations just to go and reopen up their decommissioned coal burning power stations.
Uh-huh.
After the cheap Russian gas was switched off to their economy. Late 2022, early 2023, which obviously meant, you know, it sort of like looked very weird, because here's what you're doing. You are shooting yourself in your left foot to go and put your amputated right foot back onto your leg. You took off the prosthetic. Now you're putting the foot back. I know it's a terrible example to use, but you literally shot yourself through the left foot. Because it was your only healthy foot, and you're trying to restitch on your amputated right foot for it now to catch up to the cheap energy that your economy had benefited from for a good 20 years.
Okay, there are two options, right? Either reopen the nuclear one or the coal one.
The nuclear guys were running all the time.
Okay, when they decided to reopen...
Even when they had the gas. Even when they had the Russian.
Yeah, they were running.
Yeah, they were running.
Okay, so when they reopened... when they reopened the coal power plant, the nuclear ones were already running.
Yes, and the nuclear ones were then told, you must switch off. And the coal power ones were being switched off. And then they were told, no, you must be switched back on. And people were like, huh?
Which one I was switching on, because if I was asked to pick between which one to switch on between coal and nuclear, I would go with nuclear.
Do you know why I say that?
Yeah.
Because late 2022, yeah, there was a mass demonstration at a village that was sold to an energy company in Germany. The village had a massive deposit of coal below the village. So it was between the local municipality in this German province and this company negotiated. You know what? What do we do? We want access to the resource, the mandate, the policy.
But your house is on the resource.
And the German state government said they must now try and sort of like meet the economic needs of the country so as to do the transitioning discussions, which includes Namibia's green hydrogen program.
Yeah.
And while that's happening, please, by all means, ensure that the lights stay on. So, that was the first indication that I saw, where Germany was literally doing a dance on both sides of the same court. You know, you were playing the for and you were playing the against side. Yeah. Which also helps to explain to me, as a lay person on the street, Now, in many cases, when it comes to political policy making or political impetus, you know, what they put into a policy that will obviously speak to what they wish to commit, you will always see them trying to play both sides. Now, you and I know, Helmut, the phrase opportunity cost is such a lovely one in economics because it actually means you only have enough resources to pursue one of the two particular policies. You have to balance which one you start with now. Now, at the same time, because since last year into this year, there were reports rampant enough talking about Germany's deindustrialization, supposedly, because of the loss of the cheap Russian energy. And on the horizon would have been the proposed cheaper hydrogen energy. But they are still ways of, they're still like far away in terms of that realization actually becoming mainstream in Europe, because many of the German energy companies are investing in the renewable, in sunlight, in solar there, in wind, in hydroelectric, in nuclear, in what's the other one's name? What's the other one's name? There's another one.
Green.
Gas. They're investing in gas. They're investing in everywhere. Reason being, last week when I wrote the article for the Nama Traditional Leaders Association alongside their NGO partners that are helping them, you know, sort of like relaunch their case against the Namibian and German governments, which is obviously once again kicked off because it was filed again last week, a new case. Well, it's technically not a new case because they cite 2023 as a starting date. So just as a little bit of backstory, the NTLA and the NGO partners from Germany and the UK cite all three of them cited, yeah, their lobbying efforts are the reason as to why the German energy company RWE is withdrawing from Namibia's green hydrogen program. But RWE, when Hyphen Energy was asked, Hyphen Green Hydrogen here in Namibia was asked, you know, is this a reality? Is this true? Is there any fact? It was said no, because supposedly the MOU that was signed last year and MOUs that were signed in 2022 and developments that occurred in 2023 actually showed that RWE was actually concentrating a lot more on other renewable energy projects. And green hydrogen wasn't one of them. So, in a case, obviously, because I always try to be as objective as possible, I always try to give you the middle point. That point, that position that I explained in terms of German energy companies investing in everything renewable on the planet, across the world, should actually tell everyone that all of them are actually scrambling for any kind of energy source where they can capitalize from. Meaning, this is a pure sales strategy, maximize profits, see where the numbers are actually in our benefit versus where we can see that the numbers probably won't be in the benefit or won't be in our benefit in the immediate future. Now, this obviously does not mean, and I'm not promoting or defending the green hydrogen program, even though I might be slightly disappointed in terms of that news element, that it's not failing. Nor am I trying to defend it, because obviously they've got their experts and people that have to do their thing.
Yeah.
Because that's obviously being touted as a national project, Helmut. When you come into the realm of the status of the nuclear energy discussion, you can literally see that the German government itself and the rest of the world, their policies, it's not muddled, but it's a policy that says, Put your eggs in as many baskets as possible. Put your bet on as many outcomes as possible so that you try to minimize any potential negative or rejections or negative outcomes as much as possible so that you know that the ones that do actually produce the best outcomes, you actually sit with the best smile, with the best, you know, sort of like proof of, hey, this thing can work. And we've seen this even with the combustion engine. The combustion engine was not the first engine invented. It was actually an electric and a steam engine for a car, for the first idea of a car.
Yeah, the first time I found out that electric cars are as old as time was... But sometimes last year, it's like... So most of it is basically a reinvention.
Yeah, it's just regurgitation. It's just,
it's something that has just been shelved for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then after realizing the negative, the negative environmental consequences of fossil fuel, that's when we started going, don't we have somewhere on our shelved, shelves of wisdom, any energy generation methods that are less consequential when it comes to when it comes to damaging the environment, especially the atmosphere? Because when you look at it from an atmospheric standpoint, you begin to understand why it's a global concern. Because clouds, it's basically these are just gas balls that flies around the whole planet.
A cloud.
Yep.
It's actually water vapor.
Then gases form.
And then, it's not a gas. Then water vapor.
Yeah, which can be swept from one place to another.
Yes.
And that means Namibia's, Namibia's actions. Kenya can pay the consequences for Namibia's actions, and then Namibia can pay the consequences for for Kenya's actions. So the biggest problem here now is where I think the transition is one that is very somewhat scary, any type of change, because this one also, one of the reasons why it's not very surprising to realize why it's scary is because of the amount of investment that the transition requires. It requires a lot of money. So, if you have money and you want to invest in any form of a green energy to help with the transition, it's kind of difficult to know which one is going to emerge out as victorious, like you just pointed out. With the development of a combustion engine, there were several things that were tried out in terms of mechanics and working parts and the type of fuel that should be used. So for us to settle with a diesel, for us to end up settling with diesel, diesel and petrol, the scientific community, basically the experts in the field, had to go through trial and error. We tried everything, including methane. In a lot of sports cars, sports cars is in literal sense of the word sport, in a literal definition of the word sport, they used, there was a point where they used ethanol, which is to some degree the same chemical makeup that makes up your hand sanitizers, especially the high concentration one. The biggest problem they kept facing is that every time they caught fire, these chemicals burned with colorless flame. So they just had a bunch of guys that were running around shouting they were on fire, but no one could see the fire. So by the time that they realized that, homeboy is basically burning, it's just that we can't see the fire because you need some kind of complete darkness or some specialized camera for you to see the fire. So we tried many forms of energy. And many forms of fuel before we settled with petrol and diesel, and then perfected the efficiency by adding in a lot of chemicals to help with both efficient burning and help with emissions. Help basically reduce emissions, not escalate it through the sky. Now, that means the energy transition with regards to transitioning from fossil fuel based energy, energy sources to the ones that are now classified under green energy forms. One harsh reality to basically face is like any new technology, its efficiency and reliability is still need a lot of work. Now, that's where, you now see what you just pointed out, which is, where you have the entities more like nations with money now having multiple investment points investing in different, green energy initiatives. Because, just in case one fails and the other one that's successful, at least you have your foot in there too. instead of just, you know, investing in one direction and then the one that you're investing in, which is a serious gamble, because if you invest in one and it's successful, well, the Lord or ancestor or anything or anyone that was on your side, so congratulations, you win. But God forbid anything goes south, anything you invested in that venture, they basically now you have to, get therapist and learn to deal with it. Now, then that leaves us with one interesting point of looking at things. Like, if you have enough money to invest in different green energy initiatives, you can do that. But just because, you know, when one take, for example, if one fails, the one that's successful, you have your foot in it. But if you only have enough money to invest in one, you really have to gamble and basically do that investment with all your fingers and toes crossed and hoping the one that you're investing into is the one that becomes successful. Because if it goes belly up, then all your investments are, well, up in smoke.
Actually not.
In what way?
There's a lovely mechanism known as insurance.
Oh, no. Now you're just scaring them.
No, not me. Helmut, do you know how, I don't want to use a colloquial term, man, like on the ball or focused, but do you know the level of diligence that is applied to economic planning in these economies? This is now a guy that I know. That knows a guy, that knows a guy.
You know a guy who knows, how are we still broke?
No, I'm not talking about the broke element. It's just about the conversation element, you know, to feed into this dimension.
Okay.
That, remember when David had to go there to a shoveling situation there in...
Yeah, groundbreaking, blah, blah,
and
blah.
And I'm really glad David is not now listening to us because he's busy with his preparations. But David went there to a session and there was a whole... get together gala situation also happening there at the coast. And this guy that I know was sitting at the same table where some of the planners for the project there in one of the multiple green hydrogen phases had flown in from, was it from Germany or from Britain? No, the guy flew in from Belgium. Yeah, sorry. And they were talking about, you know, the discussions and then, you know, conversations lead to another. And then the question was just popped there to this Belgian, you know, so how are you guys, what do you guys do if things don't potentially work out in Africa?
Mm-hmm.
It says, but bro, for continents like Africa, your money is always insured. If the money goes down the drain and the thing doesn't work out, we make our money back home. The insurance policy pays out.
Let me get this straight.
The South Africans do the same thing with Africa. The insurance policy pays out.
These insurance companies operate with the same love of money that some insurance companies, I won't mention, operate on, right?
Of course.
You have to provide...
It'll even be the same insurance company.
Oh.
Helmut. What Namibians
also? So before I take out my money to go, to throw it in any investment, investment mechanism, I first have to get an insurance company to insure that money.
Yes. Because you now went, probably borrowed the money.
Yeah.
Or the money is probably part of your development funds in the company. Because obviously at budgeting level in any company, you put out various budgets for various projects. Think of it as just like the same thing we have to watch every month. Every year, when it comes to the financial planning for the state, you know, the
different ministries,
budgeting,
development programs, yeah.
Exactly. So think of it what most of these multinationals also do. They do the same exact thing. It's just with them, you've got to reach targets that actually translates to money being
made. Return on investment, yeah.
Yeah. When they take that budgeted money out of their account, they obviously take their legal guy, their operations manager, all that. And then they go to the insurance company and say, we're going to this project. This is what we've got. This is the project's name. The insurance company obviously also do its due diligence. Go and ask, did the Namibian government place an EIA notice or something somewhere?
Yeah.
And then they see, oh, there's a notice. And they say, sure stuff. You've got our blessing. Go. We can insure your money.
So there are no chances of ending up like the, you know, the 1940s German and the Austrian going, what gold? Okay, no, that's a good thing. Now, we do that, right?
Who?
As a country, when we are, you know, take for example, we are investing in some initiatives, is the money that we are investing also insured, or are just crossing our fingers and leaving everything to the ancestors?
I hope we do that.
Yeah.
Primarily that I hope that Namibian SOEs actually invest in the insurance market of Namibia to insure their products. But I suspect we do it. I suspect they do have it.
Better.
Because the state has an insurance, has two insurance SOEs. You've got Namibre, which actually, under Kali Schletwein, when he was Minister of Finance, they wanted him and the CEO of Namibre, they wanted to technically somehow strong-arm the local insurance market in Namibia to tell them, hey, listen, and somehow you must be laying your insurance claims through us, through Namibre.
Okay, how is that possible?
Exactly, because the market has existed longer than this SOE.
Yeah.
And then the other government SOE is the, what's that one's name?
Isn't that just creating unnecessary middlemen?
That has also been a lot of the particular accusations to the Namibian government for introducing a lot of middlemen. The only one that I can see that has made major traction and actual benefits to the state has been Namra. But, you know, I'm also not praising Namra. I'm just, you know, we're just seeing the benefits to the state.
Mm-hmm. No, you don't.
We still have to see the benefits that actually cascade to you and me, Helmut.
You don't have to.
Because I still want to see a circular, what's that thing's name? The actual existence of a circular economy, trickle-down economics working, and even a bus service functioning in a circular manner in Windhoek. But before we continue.
Yeah, now after the break, we're going to come back to reality.
Save the date for November 26, 2025, when all registered voters head to the polls for the regional councils and local authorities elections. Your voice matters, and your vote is your voice. Head to your nearest polling station and elect your leaders. Remember, every vote counts. Get involved. Put your voice in the box. Vote on November 26, 2025.
Check your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsi Nehangano, The Osherero Omaimburilo, The Catholic Simane Kakarunga, The Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Just a minute, past the hour of five. This is Homerun with Helmut and Dwight. Welcome back. So, where were we? Back to reality from, trickle down economy.
Yeah, and all that scenarios. But that was obviously in relation to the benefits of Namra's collection efforts.
Yeah. This was, the whole insuring money before investing.
Yeah. So, the Namibian government has another insurance company, NSOE. Oh yes, there is its name, Nazria. I forgot about them. So Nazria has a sister insurance company like in South Africa. that if any natural disasters happen,
mm-hmm.
you have to go place your claims at that entity. So the it's Nazaria, yeah. So the entity ensures, it's not a reinsurer, but the entity insures or has to pay back or has to pay out claims on natural events like the wildfire that impacted
Etosha
last week and the week before. And if, let's, for example, say also loss of life and stuff like that, loss and damage to property and loss of livestock and all that, then you've got to place your claim there. You don't go to the OPM's office and go place your claim at the OPM. The OPM does not have such an office, I suspect, even though they might have a disaster risk management policy and it falls within the OPM and there is a directorate for that. You don't place your claim there. That's the unfortunate thing, which would obviously have been, you know, also a little bit weird-ish regarding the reporting that states that it seems that it was a farmer that created the chaos. You don't know?
No. Oh, man.
It was confirmed. It was a resettlement farmer who tried making coal. And then the first thing was that the charcoal association went like, whoa, he's not part of us. First and foremost, we checked membership status. He's not part of us.
And so then, they went full Peter on him.
And then the ministry has a statement saying, we recognize that it's a farm that borders onto the park that where the fire stems from. And then somewhere on a local Afrikaans radio station, I hear that the guy calls a farmer right next to where the farm, who has a farm right next to Etosha, and asks, yeah, I hear it was a goat herder that started the fire. And I was like, what? Why are you blaming a goat herder for smoking and throwing a cigarette away? Guys, to be honest, the fears around fires caused by cigarettes is real. But do you for once think that the cigarette companies did not invest to ensure that the technology has the most minimal impact on starting a fire? Where did most cigarette fires start? Firstly, sorry, Amut.
Mm-hmm.
They started usually in homes.
Yeah.
They didn't start out in the bush.
First of all, how does that happen? Were you just walking around, looking after your cattle,
smoking,
throwing
your cigarettes away, while not every smoker. Helmut, have you ever seen a smoker? Have you ever seen a watch of smokers? They usually kill the cigarette. Whether it's out in the bush, whether it's on a pavement, whether it's here at the studio. We've only got one smoker here, guys, but I won't mention.
Could be one irresponsible goat header.
Helmut.
But for the,
it's a slow burning technology.
But for the fire to reach the level that, that it reached towards, basically attracting national and possible global attention, what I find baffling is that, is someone just snoring and not understanding, or more like not knowing what's going on, what's going on in their farm? So no one saw the smoke and tried to contain the fire before it spread any further like it did.
And that's the thing now. Because the claims that are obviously coming out is obviously one based upon, how to deal with disaster risk management. But I know we are jumping the gun here into a different discussion because we're supposed to stay on energy and not on destructive energy.
That is destructive.
Yeah. So, in a nutshell, so that was the particular.
Money insured.
Yeah. That was the particular discussion. But getting back to money insured in terms of projects and the likes. Now, obviously this World Status Report, guys, they relied on the International Atomic Energy Agency's statistics. But I'm now slightly more afraid of the IAEA, primarily because of what happened to Iran back in June.
Unfortunately.
I've never seen, dear listeners, I will share today with you a big fear. And we spoke about it when Helmut and I had the Iran-Israel and Iran-US,
12-day exchange of greeting in forms of missiles.
Yeah, you know, in that very, very, very much intimate relationship that was happening there.
Mm-hmm.
I now see the power that the IEA actually carries. And you know that Grossi has put in his nomination, his bid for to become the next general, secretary general of the UN.
One more time.
He is contesting for Guterres' position.
Okay, here is the problem with that. Okay, here's one of the many problems with that.
Look, Grossi is a good politician, and I watched him every time as an engineer. He's very well, he's oiled up, Helmut.
Yeah, I know that part. But the thing is, you know, it comes up again to that. Look, it makes a lot of people now lose faith in, you know, in the organization you are running if you have partial application of the rules that the organization is built on.
Yeah.
They literally had, CCTV cameras installed in the Iranian nuclear facilities.
Yeah.
No one have asked the same, or no one have done the same, or even asked to do the same thing about Israel. Now, at this point, everyone outside, you know, everyone, I mean, anyway, you know, any member states that's not party to this organization will be standing there going like, why should I even sign up to be part of your organization if this is how you apply your rules?
Mm.
And now he's planning on running the United Nations. Nice.
And here's the other concern. Who would then be the person taking over the IAEA? Because the IAEA is the only agency of the UN that reports directly to the Security Council. The board of the IAEA is made up of representatives of who?
Of
the
course.
Security Council. So, and this also has to, and I'm now bringing, I'm showing that reality, dear listeners. Because last year, when Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, under its old name, because now it's Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform, when they hosted the particular event that took place at Marintel, when our former colleague went there as well, the discussion around the water table's name? What's the aquifer's name? Around the orange basin. Yeah, the orange basin. The aquifer that stretched the transboundary aquifer from Namibia into Botswana into South Africa. Because of obviously the
one about the in situ mining.
Yeah, but the in situ mining and exploration activity here in the east of Namibia.
Yeah.
And I have a sneaky suspicion potentially that was probably also one of the particular sort of like reasons for President Nandi Ndaitwah's visit last week to Gobabis. Because obviously the governor of Omaheke had been a major proponent for this development. Just to let you guys know, just so that you know, facts on the table. We don't deal with anything else, but we look at real facts. And I'm just citing, I don't know exclusively if it's the main reason, but obviously the president, obviously, you know, she is doing all her regional visits. So I have to look at a trend in terms of what message she says in each of these regional visits. Because the regional visits to the north of Namibia, all of them coincided specifically with the green schemes, the economic activities there.
So mostly based on the projects, developmental projects going on in that particular region, yeah.
Exactly. And these things, obviously, then they resonate back to the NDP-6 program, which you and I already dissected. So we now have to see, for example, in trend analysis, you know, is the president, you know, is she trying to walk the talk that is espoused from NDP-6 in terms of, the visits, what would be the messaging on the ground to the people? So, getting back to the facts again. Now, when I stated, Helmut, that the IAEA reports directly to the Security Council of the UN, the IAEA is also the same particular body that Namibia's own nuclear council, remember the guys that went there for the conference?
Yeah.
And I forgot the guy's name, but the head of the mission that Namibia sent of the delegation, shook hands with Mariano Grossi, you know, in a photo, lovely photo there, going like, hey, here we are, you know, let's make this look official, you know, there's a Namibian shaking hands.
Yeah, you did send me that picture. Grossi looks like he's about to say execute order 66.
No, but I didn't realize he's that tall, Grossi. I really didn't. Against the Namibian guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty tall. Anyway, so Grossi was obviously, you know, shaking hands with our Namibian delegation lead that was there. And Namibia obviously went and mentioned there to Grossi, you know what, we Namibia wants to achieve these goals and, you know, what's the thing happening? And Namibia already technically, silently has a partner. I say already, technically, silently, Namibia already has a partner.
Don't forget we are a friend to all and an enemy to none.
Yeah, that's most what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Who the partner is. The partner is based in South Africa, but they actually come out of Russia, you know.
We are very good at visiting Russia, in and out. How the heck did we even find out of?
You know, that's Namibia, you know, we've got the partner already. We have the technical partner already.
Maybe a sleek.
Yeah.
Look, we understand.
If we were ever Casanova,
I would be very good at it.
Oh, we would have. But we would also have had kids everywhere.
Not to mention STD.
Why? Why did you have to? Why?
Lots of it.
Namibia would have been the best lover ever in human history. Hey guys, these are facts. This is Namibia's.
Look, you have to understand, it's not just Namibia. Look,
it's our international relations policy.
Yeah, that's basically geopolitics 101.
Yeah, and we're making sure we're just sliding through it.
Yep.
No puns intended, please. But we are sliding.
Okay, I did not think of it that way until you brought in no pun.
Yeah, because, you know,
now I need therapy.
Many people, you know, out there, you know.
Very.
Not filling in gaps.
Not clean minds. Yeah.
So, when we obviously look at this scenario, we're obviously positioning ourselves best as an African country, but we are behind other African countries. I'll say it again. We're positioning as the best potential, but we are behind. Because when we did the women and nuclear, African women and nuclear discussion at the start of the year, remember?
Mm.
Where Morocco is ahead of us. Egypt is ahead of us. Mali is Mali, or was it Mali? Yeah, Mali is ahead of us.
Even the report.
Burkina Faso was ahead of us. Who was the other African country that was also exploring it? I didn't even listen to Namibia's contribution because I asked our former colleague, Justicia, you know, what did the Namibian say? Ach, Dwight. You can't even use that, what we contributed. I was like, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. And I had a sneaky suspicion because I obviously also could look up who are we sending where? You see, Amun, when Namibia's delegation to the IAEA conference, just before the UN General Assembly took place, the photo that Namibia had of Namibia's delegation, we had a physicist there, we had NCRST's Peters there, we had the lead of the head of the delegation, what's the guy's name? The guy that I think that comes from the Ministry of Health, and we had two other technical experts there. That's the kind of person you want on internet. Those are the kind of people you want to talk on behalf of Namibia in terms of developments. Not that woman's discussion. I didn't mention names, guys, just so that you know. But we also need to be serious about who we send where. It's not the first time where fellow Namibians have observed other Namibians in terms of, okay, what are you coming to do in this other part of the world?
Just to, you know, go there, sit and warm the chair, take down the hotel.
No, Helmut, the accusations are rife.
Worse than that?
Yeah.
Jeez, okay.
Specifically of government officials that are invited to these international events And then they go and ride boats and walk around in the city and take photos like a tourist. But they were invited to a 5-day event.
Yeah, reminding me of how Nigeria went viral during the ticket when everyone, you know, the Nigerians in Japan were like, okay, this is our stall, well-labeled Nigeria, but there is no one here. But the list indicates that there are a lot of people that came with the president who is now attending the main conference, but this stall must be here with the president's delegates. Where the heck are they? I'm like, well.
Oh, yeah, we sent most our prime minister.
Prime minister's there.
So, this should obviously just tell anyone that, you know what, if we're going to be serious as a continent, in Namibia's context, we wish to now pull up our socks, we really have to step up.
I've never attended this, events the size of the showgrounds, right? Until the previous one when one friend of mine basically dragged me there. And I'm really hoping she's not listening.
Which events at the show?
The showgrounds that took place here in Windhoek. Here's the thing. The first thing I noticed aside all the rides and stuff was the stalls that were basically scattered all across that area. I ran into a stall from the Minister of Home Affairs, Office of the Auditor General, and she kept wondering why I was dragging her to all these ministries. I'm like, okay, look, well, this is, can you just do something that's not work? I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Because these guys are basically here for you to interact with them. And now, you know, everyone just decided to go for adrenaline. I'm like, okay, sure, go bananas. Mm. But now I'm picturing, all the events, take for example, like Ticket that takes place. The setup is, I'm picturing basing it on mostly Nigerians complaining about the president's delegates during the ticket discussions of not being present at the stall. So, while the president or the prime minister, whoever your country happens to send, is explaining to the audience that this and this and this is what Namibia is able to provide or contribute to this partnership. There's a stall that at least have a sample or two showing that, okay, now, if you are looking if the discussion is textile, this is what Namibia can contribute textile-wise. If the discussion is about energy, this is what, if you want to familiarize yourself with what I'm telling you here, you can swing by our stall and see just one or two of the things that we can contribute. So when I was walking around all their stalls, because they were MTC, both public and private, we basically came together, had their stalls, and I ran into a stall or two from different countries. One that I remember properly was was from Zambia. They had all their products. Now, what I kept looking at now with all my, the one that I didn't have as much fun as I was, I thought I would, because what I kept seeing was the Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Mm.
So because they had, they had leather products that, especially, the very nice shoes that I saw on the, on the Zambian stall, and some very nice games, among other things, on the Zimbabwean one. Look, this is amazing. Except then you show up, you shouldn't really mix education and entertainment, because people tend to focus on entertainment more than they do on education, because a lot of people showed up totally wasted.
And you think that's education or entertainment?
That's why I'm saying people tend to focus on entertainment more. Yeah.
No. The decision they made to show up wasted.
Because the whole event, if you are going to call it showgrounds, it's more tailored towards entertainment than education, which is why, the stalls take, for example, from different ministries. They had, they had these pamphlets or booklets that they were just handing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They only explain things to you if you were just sitting there and you're interested in knowing more, then they'll be there. But other than that, because they knew that most of them are just going to be passing by. So just here's a booklet, read it, or no, that's on you. Going to a presentation for example, not knowing what the discussion is about, let alone what to say if you're asked, It's like you and I showing up here, you know, just waking up, you know, just, you know, waking up and saying, today we're going to talk about this whole 2025 nuclear report. Yeah, it's not even waking up, just walking in here and then turn on the mics and start saying, what do you think we should talk about? Oh, this report. And then you start now scratching your head like which page says what?
Mm.
Yeah, which is very embarrassing. Very embarrassing.
No, it technically shows that we would not have read what is in the report.
That's one easy way to get fired. I mean, even I would fire me if I did.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So, one thing that I found, interesting about this report is that, this is a report that is running from, this is a report that's running from the 19, what? Page 5 says a national nuclear power program set up and phase out, because they are recording the implementation of new nuclear power plants, mm-hmm. and those ones that are being decommissioned. One that was emphasized in terms of decommissioning, the one that had been recently decommissioned, I think that was last year, was the one in Taiwan. Now, first off, before you get to, you know, to, that's one way of looking at it. Now, accumulated number of national programs as of year end 1954 to 2024 and July 2025.
Mm.
Now, if you look at the, where the nuclear power plants where the nuclear power plants are located, are located around the world, see that, Africa is could use a lot of investment.
Yeah,
a lot of investment, because I only see Egypt. I only see Egypt on the map. Now those overview, especially you have construction on page 14, and you have who is building Russia. Russia dominates international market because, well. Russia is a self-contained country because they have all the resources that a lot of countries are struggling to get. They can simply mine it.
Plus, they also already have the
industries. They have the expertise. They have the industries. Like,
yeah, they have everything I want.
Yeah, that's Africa in 500 years.
Oh, you're making it depressing.
I know.
500 years. That's brutal.
Look, judging by how we're handling this,
my goodness, no, I would know. It could be a reality 500 years from now.
The report starts to get juicier from page 14. The graphs are from page 14, 15, 16, all the way to 18. Just all the way to 18, because it does show. If you take, for example, page 14, you're looking at the nuclear reactors under construction in the world. Those ones that are under construction, and the first thing you see there is, first of all, China has a ton of them.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then you have your technology supply by country, reactors under construction with domestic technology, and then foreign technology. And you have a technology supplied by a foreign country. That's when Africa gets that's when Africa now leaves the chat, because, well, foreign technology, of the four dots that you see in Egypt, they're all foreign technology.
But here's the thing also. Remember when I started with the discussion of the Germans?
Yeah.
With them not knowing to be or not to be nuclear or fossil, lending or borrowing there from.
Just had to go for Shakespeare.
From Shakespeare there with Hamlet. I liked Hamlet. Out of all the plays, I actually liked Hamlet a lot.
That's my favorite, To Be or Not to Be is my favorite, it's my favorite, Shakespeare of Shakes.
Yeah.
Or Shakespeare's works. Yeah. That one.
Because the downside of Hamlet is such a bad tragedy. Not bad that it's like, not entertaining writing. It was one of the most impactful tragedies, because literally this poor Prince Hamlet, his uncle, meaning his deceased father's brother, wants his inheritance as king of Denmark, wants to marry his mother, which makes the whole thing insidious and just down bad. I mean, think of that in a modern day context. But hey, these things happened.
Royalties, both in Greek mythology and in literal medieval, basically Roman, and are based on
a whole bunch of nasty stuff.
Ancient Egypt, you know, marry your sister to keep, you know, because you are both gods. Translation: keep power in the family.
Yeah, Hanagam, they don't know that, you know, Baragim just might work against you. Go ask the Habsburgs.
Big time.
Magical jaw.
They basically gave the medical condition Habsburg its name.
Yeah.
Habsburg.
So if you show up with that jaw, even if you're African,
we're not going to ask. We'll just know.
We'll just look at you.
And go.
So,
okay.
The dimension obviously from that being is that the tragedy is literally, you can literally see Europe playing this Shakespearean tragedy version of Hamlet in terms of to drop nuclear or not, because some of them still have nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
But now they're switching back on their coal power stations. And the foreword of this report, which was written by an Italian expert, states there specifically that Italy in the 60s went and introduced, is it four? One, two, three, four. Yeah. Four nuclear power stations. Just to go and sign two referendums, the one in the 80s, because of Chernobyl, and the second one in 2011 because of Fukushima. Each one of obviously had their unique, stories to tell around their accidents, context of their accidents.
Yeah.
And now Italy was now trying to scale down from nuclear power dependence. But then you get the developing world, like countries like Namibia and Egypt and Mali and Kenya and South Africa, who are now popping up because Kuberg is being recommissioned, being switched back on.
Mm.
And remember, Kuberg's technology, which you cited, you know, the foreign technology that came in, was also foreign because it was technology given through the Israelis to the South Africans pre-independence. The Indians also have a whole bunch of nuclear power stations. The Chinese. The Pakistanis apparently also have a whole bunch. But before we continue, guys, ad break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Siwanasana Mibia. Kamberera Omat.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Well, welcome back. So, India. A bunch of foreign technology, nuclear energy-based energy generation.
Yeah, so you've got India, you've got Pakistan, you mentioned Taiwan. And do you know what's the weirdest thing, Helmut, is that even even though some of the power stations could be like offline today, like as we were speaking around the world, they are considered LTO, meaning long-term operational. Meaning if they operated for more than 10 to 15 years, they get reclassified or categorized in this report as being LTO, meaning long-term operational. Obviously, a reactor like Chernobyl and Fukushima, or those reactors, would obviously now be completely decommissioned because of their environmental disasters. The instance of these particular things is that some of the reactors are factored into this report. Remember when I said in the description of today's social media poster is that 416 are considered active around the world.
Yeah.
And this status report from these from these entities, these German entities that assess the global nuclear statistics and all that, they state that actually 8 are technically offline and 408 are active. So you obviously see particularly that the IEA classifies some that were recently decommissioned as still being active because they're in their winding down phase, and some that were decommissioned, let's say, a couple of years ago, are still considered because they ran for more than 20 years or 15 years in terms of producing electricity. In the broader scope of things, where you've got to look at the actual presence of these energy sources, Helmut, obviously when Namibia wants its nuclear power production, we have to look at a good 25 to 50 years from such an investment. We really have to look at this, because really, guys, we really want to see all manner of industry pop up. I mean, when the Italians, in this foreword written by one of the particular authors of this report, this what's this individual's name? Letizia Magaldi. She cited here, the moment Italy in the 60s, or nuclear power in Italy, is characterized by the pioneering role in the construction of the power plants, which led to the country becoming the third largest producer, Italy, of nuclear power in the world in the 1960s. Remember, Helmut, that literally from 1945 to 1960 is a 15-year period. They could construct 4 power stations, 4 nuclear power stations in that 15-year period. What was the level of investment? What was the level of capacity development, meaning having the skills on the ground?
It has to be a lot.
And remember that the Manhattan Project was under research and development during the Second World War. So we're talking about a space of 20 years of knowledge, which quickly culminates during the reconstruction period of Europe after the Second World War. One of the countries was quick to adopt nuclear energy, building the power stations, having the staff on hand to work with the technology. How quick was that? And you get to ask yourself the same question: how quick would it be for us to jump onto the same boat? Where are our nuclear physicists? Why aren't we producing more nuclear physicists? I came from a talk yesterday which literally positions itself against the talk we are having today. Space science development, right, is some of the particular policies that Namibia now actively wants to pursue. They now actively want to draft and develop legislation and a draft bill. But why are we looking at nuclear energy and nuclear science development? Why aren't we? And the other scientific research realms around uranium mining and all that, and storage and handling of waste potentially. Why aren't we working into that sphere? Because here's the concern, Helmut. Namibia's lead, our lead specialist on that visit to the IAEA conference back in September, was chaired by a doctor, a medical doctor. Wasn't chaired by a physicist. It's chaired by a medical doctor. Doch, man, Helmut, really?
Yep.
Really? I mean, really, Helmut? We're on the cusp. Our NDP6 shouts there, we need nuclear energy. And the guys that we're sending to, where is it? Vienna, Austria, are being led by a medical doctor. Look, there's nothing against the discipline, and there's nothing against the individual as well. The downside is just, you need someone that will be thinking broader. Because a medical doctor...
in line with what's being discussed?
Yeah, because a medical doctor will obviously be thinking about medicine's particular role nuclear.
Yeah, but nuclear does have a medical application, right?
Yeah, the scanning and the fight against cancer and the scanning, obviously, like your radiation.
Your
radiation facilities, which are expensive.
Yeah, really expensive.
For consumers.
So the best person to send there would be someone who's, who is an expert in nuclear in terms of energy generation, not in terms of how to deal with the aftermath just in an event there is a nuclear fallout.
Well, if you also have to look at Mariano Grossi, he's a nuclear scientist.
Yeah.
He's a scientist instead of just, being a government official.
So it's like sending, take for example, Mariano Grossi to an agriculture.
To a video game convention.
What the heck is he going to do there?
Exactly.
Now I get the point.
Exactly. I don't want to use the other one that I had in the back of my mind.
But look.
You would have been marched out right here. Immediately.
Look, man. You're underestimating the love I have for my salary.
Definitely not. I'm not underestimating anything. I also love that salary.
Yeah. I know.
It helps to pave many ways.
Open many doors. A lot of doors. And those.
Yeah, you said that out loud, Edmund.
Nah, did not. So the potential newcomers, that's now my favorite of the report. Potential newcomers of nuclear countries on the African continent. Listen to that list. Now, you have, first of all, Ghana is on that list.
Mm.
You have Kenya is on that list.
Oh, yeah, that was the other country, yeah. Ghana.
Ghana, yeah. You have Kenya on that list. Nigeria, and you have... Uganda. No, that I did not see coming. For some reason.
Who? Uganda?
Yeah. It turns out, Uganda is doing one thing right in terms of, striving for their energy independence, and that's, they are investing, they're investing in nuclear energy to the point where they have, were basically attracted a global attention in terms of factoring them into statistics of upcoming nuclear energy generating giants on the continent.
Mm.
So, the World Nuclear, Nuclear Reports, Nuclear Statistics Report of 2024 reported on Uganda's, This language is a little colorful. Reported on Uganda's vague and unrealistic ambitions to develop 24 gigawatts of nuclear. I don't know why they have to go with that language, but guys, don't shoot the messenger. Now, this target was reaffirmed in 2025, which is being viewed as a major contributor to the, aimed for a total generation capacity of 52.5 gigawatts by 2040. Which in turn corresponds to over 25 times the country's mid-2024 grid generating capacity of 2 gigawatts. Now, in line with the proposed first step for building a 1 gigawatts unit of eventually envisaged 8.4 gigawatts nuclear plant at Buyende. The Ugandan government in May 2025 concluded a contract with Korean Hydro Nuclear Power, KHNP, where this entity with Dohwa Engineering, KEPC, ENC, would undertake, basically, this also points to foreign technology.
Mm.
Yeah, being adopted. Undertake pre-feasibility and site evaluation studies over 26 months. Now, that's when, that's the part that, that emphasizes the time frame required for you to basically have one of these facilities running. Unless you want to take it from a small modular reactor, but if you want to build the traditional nuclear reactor, that's gonna take a while. And a lot of resources. Because this is just, we are looking at, to undertake pre-feasibility or site evaluation studies take 26 months. And now, only after which a full feasibility study and resettlement plan will commence. Pre-feasibility study, 26 months. Only after that, then, a full feasibility study, not construction.
For how many months more?
He doesn't say. Now, this schedule alone casts a major. That's why they called in, that's why they used the colorful language of, you know, vague and unrealistic. Yeah. This schedule alone.
Technically, we can also call our policy vague and unrealistic.
You're welcome. This schedule alone casts major doubt on the declared aim of expressed by the Ugandan by the Ugandan minister to have the first 1 gig unit by 2031.
26 months is 2 years and 2 months.
Unless the goal you are going for is a small modular reactor, because of the regulations that you have to stick with to make sure that you are not, building all this, you're not building you're not building a nuclear kaboom, or more like, you're not disguising it, a nuclear kaboom building in energy generation, under energy generation, at the clock of energy generation facility. And there are a lot of facilities, we have a lot of that happening all throughout history. Unit 731, the documentary, I think that was that was recently put up by the Chinese. And pissed off the Japanese big time. But Unit 731 is one of those facilities that was disguised as a more of a, I think it's a public type of a public interest based institution.
Mm.
But what they were doing behind closed doors is basically, genocide, like in the literal sense of the word.
Mm.
Now, that was Uganda. Now, the thing is, the same thing was said, it's safe to say the same thing was said about, AIA project that shocked everyone when it came out. DeepSeek. Yeah, a lot of people was that back in 2022, were laughing at the guy that, no, this is just a rich guy with a lot of money and that doesn't know what to do with it. So he's just coming up with some insane way to invest the money so he can spend it. And then came up with an AI model that shocked everyone at a fraction of the price. But before we continue, commercial price.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
While we are on the discussion of African countries and where the energy must be, I think this is where the Namibian model of we are a friend to all and an enemy to none now basically, rings a lot of bells, because if you look at what's going on in the world of nuclear, from construction to decommissioning, the construction part is being dominated by Russia.
Mm.
Now,
one French and I think there's like two Chinese.
Mm-hmm. But
most of the technical work.
Yeah, the dominant powerhouse
is being done by Rosatom.
Yeah.
And which is one of the reasons why I said a little bit earlier, Helmut, Namibia already has its partner. Namibia doesn't have to look far.
Mm-hmm.
It's already there.
Is that from, from page 14 when it says that, it's talking about construction. Global overview. Who is building? Russia dominates international market. Nuclear power reactors under construction in the world. Units by construction, by construction country and supply technology. Oh no. Well, Russia is dominating that market. And now that creates some very interesting diplomatic, discussions to be had if we want the construction, if you want the technology to spread. Because now when you're looking at it, On an international level, in terms of of energy independence, we want to incorporate nuclear energy in the energy mix that is helping with the energy transition, which makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Except you have one economic bloc on the planet that with a lot of buying power that are busy decommissioning their nuclear plants, so that basically more like a putting extra gas on the energy transition. And not only are they decommissioning their nuclear energy plants, but they are also, structuring their market in a way that, they will only accept products that, at least without extra levies, glued up on top of them. Yeah. If these products can be proven or can be shown to have been made with energy that's not emitting carbon. Now, as a country that takes advantage of that market, like yours truly here, you are going, okay. How do you then classify nuclear? Is it carbon free or?
But nuclear is outside of it, Hama.
Outside of it.
Yeah. That's the thing. Nuclear doesn't create, a byproduct. Steam. Okay. They don't.
Like carbon dioxide?
Yeah.
Because in the cooling, steam, they produce a lot of it.
No, they produce steam because the goal.
Steam is basically water, so.
Yeah.
They're good.
But the goal is obviously that the water in the nuclear discussion is there to cool down the nuclear rods, the fuel. Because the fuel is obviously busy splitting itself. The splitting is the energy.
Yeah.
Which sounds very similar to the green hydrogen discussion because it's the splitting of the oxygens from the two hydrogen molecules that is literally taking place. So you're literally, on a molecular level, splitting water. And you're converting it into two gaseous forms. The byproducts, obviously, would be the oxygen and the hydrogen set one side. Now, the same thing is literally the issue with nuclear. There is no emission, Helmut. Well, if you want to measure heat, measure heat emissions, sure, maybe.
Come on, that's not a thing.
But that's not a thing that is being measured. If you want to measure heat,
if we are measuring heat,
then a nuclear power station loses big time.
If we are going to count heat as an emission,
because the whole reactor,
solar will have a lot of questions to answer.
No, but solar is external. The Earth is already being bombarded with the ultraviolet light,
aka yours truly, the sun.
Yeah. So, that is natural. That has been the millions of years picture. But we're now talking about you with your human intervention thing here on the ground, which Greta Thunberg is busy trying to make us feel guilty about.
Yeah.
Our actions and interventions. Greta comes from a country where, everything is sorted and probably her parents are rich.
You know, where they have rich people problems. Like,
yeah, and we
where's
are,
my yacht parked?
And, I mean, they're trying to sail to Palestine on a boat.
They were intercepted like all 40
multiple
something
times.
Multiple times. That's one thing.
They were shot at also.
That's one thing I like about civilians because, well, the general conference, I think this is one painful precedent we have set in terms of conflict resolution. Diplomats are always sitting and talking for 70 years, which is what leads to revolutions because the talking just never amounts to any solution.
But Helmut, here's the thing with Greta Thunberg and her bras.
They
were sailing as illegal immigrants into national waters of Israel.
Wasn't that national waters of Palestine because they were going to the Gaza Strip?
Because Netanyahu thinks what? Of that context.
So it's all occupation.
It's full-on occupation mode. Yeah. So obviously. Now, are you going to say, they call it a flotilla. Are you going to be sailing in there with your little cardboard or your little soapbox boat into national waters of another country who considers the whole of the world and as an enemy now? No, you're not going to do that. You're not going to be that insane. Oh yes, Greta.
Yeah, I was watching that. One of his speech that went viral last week was when he said, Joseph Goebbels once said, and everyone was like, "Hang on a second, he said who?"
So he cites the one guy The king of propaganda. You know that guy is literally listed as the king of propaganda.
Joseph Goebbels. Look, you have to understand, one thing that, one thing that we often forget about people that can be described as evil geniuses is that these guys are freakishly smart.
No, they're not.
Oh, they are.
No, they're not.
Joseph Goebbels?
No, wasn't him, Mahmoud.
Okay, who did that?
It was mainly the interrogation, not the interrogation, the intimidation tactics.
Yeah,
that's why they say never involve violence in politics today. Because the Austrian painter and his brass, the brown shirts, as they were known before the purge of the long knives, the long knives.
I'm saying that a lot of, a bunch of, evil, guys that you could describe as evil or freakishly smart. It's because a bunch of them that I know had advanced degrees.
Not the failed Austrian painter.
Not that guy.
Pol Pot was insane. Stalin was a poor farmer's boy.
Yeah.
So you can clearly see who were the power grabbers. Failed Austrian painter, Stalin, they worked through authoritarian programs and they implemented authoritarian and intimidation programs. I mean,
now, just look at the guys that were okay with their ideas to the point where they believed it without asking questions. The documentary I just referenced earlier, Unit 731 was run by a gentleman known as, General Shiro Ishii, who had an advanced degree in chemistry. Mm. Really smart guy, who specialized in cutting people open for quote-unquote science. And you have,
Why does that sound like Eugen Fischer?
Oh, yeah. Now, he's basically the Asian version of Joseph Mengele.
Who was trained by Eugen Fischer.
Okay, now we're going somewhere.
Eugen Fischer was the guy that was supposedly in Namibia.
The one who's inspired the whole Joseph Mengele thing.
No, he didn't inspire Joseph Mengele.
He trained him.
He trained Mengele.
And now another terrible, president we have set. In terms of advancing science. Mm. There's one debate that popped up on social media a couple of days ago that, did you know that a lot of scientific breakthrough are coming from war crimes?
Yes. Animal cruelty. Human cruelty.
Exactly.
Prisoner of war cruelty.
How did we know, this much about the human body? War crimes.
Oh yes, and the very lovely,
unfortunately,
TV show I once watched last year, known as The Artful Dodger. You know, the guy that was the best friend of Oliver Twist, ne? And then I made the accident of watching that thing, thinking, it would be PG related content, just to see. Oh my
big
goodness.
Mistake.
This is prehistoric medical practice, restricting. Oh my goodness.
Back then when the only painkiller they had was
bite on the stick.
What
was the worst part?
I don't think I can work with that.
Do you know what was the worst part in the 1800s? Ne? People show up to your surgery, brah, like it's going to the movies. You had a gallery full of the public looking at you being cut on.
There was one stress, tension, women tension release mechanism that was done back then. Now it's,
Now
it's in adult entertainment. Now the thing is, turns out it's a medical.
No, Helmut. No.
Look, man.
I also watched the
science have come a long way.
No. Yeah. We quickly take a short break, dear listeners, after that, mad, session right there that we had.
No.
We come back right after that.
Turns out 50 Shades of Grey was therapy at some point.
Vavitcha University where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education. The following programs are available: Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science, Grade 4 to 7. Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for Grades 8 to 12. Application fee is 230 Namibian dollars and the application deadline is 30 November 2025. How to apply? Applications can be done online on our website at www.wuu.edu.na. The application fee for all courses is $230 Namibian. Payments can be done at the bank, EFT, or swiping at our campuses. The proof of payment must be uploaded on the application form, along with all relevant documents. No ATM deposit receipts, meaning proof of payment in that manner, will be accepted. All foreign qualifications must be accompanied by an NQA evaluation report or certificate. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142*45845# hashtag, punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to the Coca-Cola social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. I feel like having a Coke right now, but yes. We were still leaving it at the not so nice instances or role that modern science has played.
Yeah, we have, we just went on a, you know.
On a whole tangent.
History of science is having a whole, has a lot of depressing and interesting things that you can learn.
Okay, before we continue, do you know how headaches were solved pre-1900? Before any painkillers were developed?
Lobotomy?
Lobotomy is? They're opening up your skull.
No, the way they would, you know, insert a pick in your eye to go and see,
No, we're still going nice ways, or through the nose. No, you're still going nice ways.
Really?
The Egyptians must discovered most of those pressure points here, and here below your nostril, and on another point, you just have to press very hard, and the pain goes away. No! In Europe, they actually use the drill.
Huh?
Huh?
For a headache? Thank heavens! You know what, I don't think I have given paracetamol enough credit.
Do you know that?
So thank you. Huh?
Do you know that they used to send people to the psychiatric wards for headaches? People who had chronic headaches, they would send you to the psychiatric wards
for a headache.
For a headache.
So translation: if you had a headache back then, you were nuts.
If you had a headache back then, you were downright just bad luck. Because all the bad luck starts multiplying.
Oh, man, when you throw in luck, everything goes cuckoo.
Yeah. So, yeah, life was pretty bad and pretty.
No, look,
pretty out there.
Looking at all these things, why would anyone want to invent a time machine to go to a time when
they didn't have toilet paper?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know, because you've got weird people who don't think about realities. Because the reality is on the ground also, like from this report, points literally that the whole of the developing world wants a cheap, affordable energy answer.
Yeah.
And even though the developed...
A green one.
Yeah. And even though the developed world is now trying to scale back on this thing, we are seeing the green in the equation. We're not burning any fuel.
Which is why I'm saying, why the decommissioning if it's not having the type of effects that, take for example, coal in terms of emission has?
How much? Because they have the Global Gateway facility.
Oh.
Remember the Global Gateway?
Unfortunately.
Which states they must transition themselves. So the EU is pushing for a transition. That's why they're building 2 French reactors in Britain, in the UK, even though there is that massive development taking place in the south of France, which will then power up the whole of Western Europe, the downside is still the main aim is that they've got to prove to the world that, yes, green hydrogen and all other renewable energy sources are the way to go. With my thumb floating around here in the studio. which no one else can see.
But in terms of in terms of efficiency and reliability, which are two of the biggest questions, when you talk about green energy sources, or more like forms of energy generation like wind and solar, these have been already proven with nuclear.
That's just why Grossi was.
And there are, there are a lot of variations. There are a lot of variations. You don't have to go with a full-scale, traditional, old, entire facility. You can go with a small modular.
Yeah. And modular, it will also be on the table, remember?
Yeah.
Because I think in this report, I saw small modular.
It was.
And
mentioned.
Modular is featuring also in the European context.
Uh-huh.
Because it's easy for them to tap into modular. It's easy for them to tap to put up modulars, switch it on. It doesn't take up as much land.
Yeah.
You have they have enough skills and experts to rely on, so it's easy to hire people and put them on the site. Whereas in a Namibian context, we don't know if we should go small modular or if we should go full on blast nuclear reactor. Because if Kuiberg comes online, which is a full blast nuclear reactor, Kuiberg can literally light up the whole of Africa. So now you're going to sit with two Kuibergs in this neighborhood of Southern Africa. Namibia only has 3 million people. Where's Namibia going to have the money, Hamid, to service a Kuiberg of its own?
Don't worry, we have that, South Africa will provide that. They already provide all the financial institutions, insurance, you name it. Yeah. Grocery, textile.
Which technically means that Namibia is just a market extension. That's why I still continuously, till this day, say Namibia is...
Yeah, look, there are a lot of advantages again that comes with that. One of one of them is you don't have to, you don't have to deal with the maintenance and stuff. But the bottom line is you have to import the energy, and that means you'll be paying extra because someone is carrying the cost.
The only downside is, Hamid, Namibia, we as a country, we literally have to wake up. And we literally have to start doing import substitution. Import substitution is where you actively right now, before the ministry was split up, industrialization and trade, they were running the growth at home campaign, which was a policy, which was a import substitution mechanism. We have to do this. The only downside is now, like I said, we have to balance whether we want a small modular reactor or a massive nuclear reactor.
A massive nuclear, I would give that, I would give us another, 50 to 100 years. But a small modular, that one is more feasible. The report points out in terms of 26 months just for a pre-feasibility.
And that's in Uganda now.
This is 26 months for a pre-feasibility. And God knows how long before that's when you get into the real feasibility study now. Then you now have to find all the expertise and the equipment, and you have to order in all these people that have to build this facility with a precision so good that you don't end up with a Chernobyl on your hands, because, that will be a waste of money and time. Because if you just build a full-blown nuclear, a nuclear facility, and then it's all blown up in less than a year, you are sitting with a disaster that's going to last literally your lifetime and lifetime of your generations and generations to come.
Exactly.
So you have to get it right from day one. 6 minutes into business and economic segment, time for some of us to say goodbye before we dive. We go back in the history of science again. Okay. History is nice, but the history of science is okay. There was a time when the only painkiller was a bite on this belt and close your eyes. I don't think I would go to the hospital. The only painkiller was BMN, don't cry. Okay, until tomorrow, same time.
They gave you a stick and they put it in your teeth. Bite on that while I'm cutting here. On that same time, guys, let's see each other again. Same time, same place tomorrow here on The Home Run. Stay tuned for David and the BES.
Yep.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Dierre, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Shiwana shana mibia. Kamberera omwa karunga koe pamwe na Imba. Inokara uri kwa nima yesiga. Endera pamwe ni...
Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, baby Chummy, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours. Mm. I need to tune into Eagle FM. Business Economic Segment is about to play now.
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM, the eye.